Might get Oscar Weekly.
Is MMO Weekly.
Welcome back, my friends, to the best part of your week. This is Mike, Mike, and Oscar Weekly. We have an intro song, as promised.
Look at us.
Yeah,
fancy,
we're sounding all kinds
fancy.
Of professional and stuff now. We're going to have a couple drops throughout the episode. It's not fully polished. And again, as you'll notice, we are coming to you on a Monday morning this week, as opposed to the Sunday last week, due to some scheduling stuff. But that's we wanted to try out Monday mornings anyway, like we told you. So
wanted to try out Sunday. Want to try out Monday. Sunday did well. A lot of people told us that they would like Monday kind of, you know, work day. So good luck this week, your work week. It's just going to be a short one with
That's
Thanksgiving
right.
coming up. And
or maybe it's a long one because you hate Thanksgiving and your boss is a slave driver, in which case, screw him.
Maybe you work for the bosses of Set It Up and that's your life.
Lucy Liu is just a slave driver.
If that's the case, then podcasts are your new best friend.
That's right. That's right. And we are Mike, Mike, and Oscar. This is our weekly episode taking you through the Hollywood week that was and the Hollywood week to come. Mike just told, that was also Mike telling you about
that's
your week to
come. That's a great catchphrase. Look
Thank
at that.
You. I am Mike One. We are co-hosts of this little enterprise here. And this is, once again, if you haven't joined us for our last week's, which was our debut MMO weekly episode, this is our new weekly program. We try to catch you up on all the news, information, breakdowns, box office, et cetera, et cetera.
And I'm just Mike's hype man. I just pat him on the back for all these production nuggets that he's adding and values
so
to the show.
Rocking
wow,
chair.
Look at that little thing. Look, at,
a rocking
look
chair
at this catchphrase. That's linguistically
run through shit that makes
to
no,
me.
No difference.
And we also talk coincidingly throughout the episode.
Two completely
two different.
Different
strains. Yeah. Yeah, we're like my grandparents.
Shat on a turtle! Yes. And what we do to usually to lead off these things, we like to talk about what we did last week and what are we currently watching. So, Mike, let's do that again for this fresh new short work week of the nice people out there. What are you watching that they might be able to take in over their Thanksgiving break?
So I am also Mike, and I like to think of myself as an adult, but I watched more than one coming of age story this week. I just kept doing it. I watched Big Mouth season 2, and it taught
I've
me about
a lot
the,
of good things about that.
Taught me about the birds and the bees.
All right.
I watched Never Going Back, which is a coming of age 16-year-old girls running amok.
I remember the trailer for that.
High
yes.
school dropouts yes. and waitresses. And I watched Madeline's Madeline, which is a fascinating theater like geek. Push to a 12 kind of story about Helena Howard, who's in this theater troupe, and that's like her high school, and she's it just carries over into her own life in ridiculous ways. And I liked all three of these. Never Going Back is one of those where it's like two broke girls, high school dropouts, and it's just me being old. I'm just like, don't do that. No. No, that's a terrible decision. You're making bad decisions,
if
young lady.
If all your friends jumped off a bridge, would you jump off the
I
bridge?
I just could not stop saying those things, but I enjoyed the movie. It's wild, and it's really fun, and it's really honest, and I gave it a B85, and I think the director is someone to look out for, Augustine Frizzell. She's
okay.
did a terrific job. Really, really fun movie.
That one struck the same chords in me as when I saw the trailer for We Are Your Friends, the Zac Efron passion project where he plays a DJ or an EDM DJ. And...
Yeah, it's better than that.
Yeah, okay. Good to know.
I never seen that, but it's better than that, I'm
well,
sure.
You're in good company because nobody did.
Madeline's Madeline was wackadoo. Just
see, again, high reviews overall for people
heavy
who have seen
drama
it.
Though, and this central performance, Helena Howard, remember the name. She just got nominated for Best Actress at the Indie Spirit Awards for this coming year, and she's going to be a talent to reckon with in the industry. She is awesome in this movie and is one of my top 5 actresses on the year as of now.
6.7 IMDb rating on just under 1,000 views. Yeah. A 76 Metascore. That's quite high.
There are scenes in this that will shake you to the core, though, in terms of a cringe factor, because like all her, you know, kooky acting exercises that they do in this little troupe, it trains her to be like the most awkward teenager in the history of awkward teenagers with her family. Not in like just I'm shy, but the right. opposite of that. She's
oh,
like
she's
so outgoing
very, very
and so in touch with her feelings.
Assertive and it doesn't land.
Oh my God.
Much and like our jokes.
The number of cat impressions as well. And yes, it reminded me of many of our jokes.
Fair enough.
I commiserated with her.
And oh child, no.
both the mom and her, because the mom's like the opposite one of us, whoever makes a terrible joke, and then her. Now, speaking of great jokes, though, not terrible ones, Big Mouth Season 2 is just so funny. It just kills me.
I watched the first, I think, three. This is in the second season of Big Mouth, right?
This is John Mulaney. This is everyone from the Kroll Show plus a bunch of other comedians.
I watched the first two episodes of Season 1, and I couldn't get into it, but you and other people who I very much trust have just told me I'm an idiot and I need to get back into it.
So many hard laughs in Season 2. It's just the way they say words is hysterical. When Nick Kroll comes up with a funny way to say a silly word, it's hysterical. The funniest pronunciations in the history of recent TV on the Kroll Show and in this. And that's the formula here, and I just love it so
and
much.
And everybody attached that is like coming into their own in Hollywood, too. Yeah. We've all seen Nick Kroll grow up. Yeah, John Mulaney's like one of the hottest people going. Jordan Peele, Jenny Slate is involved.
Yes, Jenny Slate was the name that was escaping me. She is hilarious.
8.1 on IMDb right now and almost 30,000 reviews, so that's probably a good trusted. Trust everyone else for that, and including also Mike. Don't trust me. I am going to give it another shot because, like I said, I was with a good friend of mine last night who said, "You're an idiot if you don't think this is funny. It's right up your alley."
Coach Steve is one of the funnier characters in a while.
All right, good. Good to know. I'll have to dive back in. Maybe I'll do that later tonight because my watching this week has just been sad.
You have had a busy week or a bitty week.
Both. Yeah, okay. I've heard many described both ways. I didn't watch much this week. I had a busy week of editing and content and recording and content creation.
I embark on frivolous.
Well, no, that's not true. We kind of divided. To give you a little behind the scenes look,
I got ahead of schedule.
Yeah, we've divided the workload here, where Mike is actually kind of the producer of the shows. He creates the flow of programming and the content within and all
You're
that.
You're the director,
and I'm more or less just the one that edits, and I come up with all the wacky stuff.
Director,
like the
editor, yeah.
Genius opening song and our spoiler warning breakdance awesome. Down.
I wanted to do the robot.
Yes. So
I did the robot.
So that's the division of work, and I just did a lot of editing and stuff. I'm also working on a couple things that I hope, I kind of teased it on Twitter earlier today. I'm working on maybe a couple guests in the future. We're hoping to line those up that we think are pretty popular names and that we think you guys have heard of and you guys would like.
Legit names there.
That's going to be exciting for us, so stay tuned for that. But other than that, as far as what I actually watched, a lot of What Culture. A lot of top 10 countdowns on Watch Mojo on YouTube there.
You're like a millennial, practically.
Not a big attention span and just watching... not good stuff.
I was just over somebody's house.
I love culture.
I was just over somebody's house for a meeting, and the kids were in the other room, and they were watching YouTube at the beginning of our meeting, and like 5 hours later, as our meeting finished up, they were still watching YouTube projected on the big screen.
This is what kids do these days, right? TV is just like passe to them, and they take all these little top 10 clips of everything going on with Joe Blow Nobody ranking things on YouTube.
Joe Blow's a good YouTuber.
He's got like the most followers, I think.
Too. Yeah. He's a good film guy, too.
And they digest this stuff. And I'm no different. I'm not criticizing because I'm a sucker for it, too. It's what I watch.
It's fun. I love the YouTube deep dives, but I only do it sporadically once
in a
while.
You're a better person for it. You're saving your soul.
I'm watching way too many movies.
You're honing your craft. You're a screenwriter. You're learning things. You comment on things.
That's what I keep telling myself, yes.
Whereas I'm watching like the top 10 heel turns in WWE history that nobody saw coming.
But you're also the relatable one on the show.
Which is a great list. I highly recommend you go check that out.
That's terrific.
More Dimension High, Dimension 20, Fantasy High, Brendan Lee Mulligan. We gave him a shout out last week. He responded. A couple other people that work on the show responded to us. That was very nice of them to notice us, and thank you for that. But again, if you have not bought Dropout from College Humor, if you have any interest at all in tabletop gaming and board games, Dungeons & Dragons types narratives, definitely go check. I think Dropout's like $3.99 a month, and there's a shitload of content on there, so it's really, really a good deal. We're not paid advertisers by them. I'm just a shill, how that works.
What I remember, Dungeons and Dragons, now this hasn't been in pop culture all that much in recent years, but what I remember most recently is like on all the Game of Thrones message boards, they had this like meme where this one guy would do a prayer hands next to every butt crack showing out the back of a folding chair.
Yes!
At a Dungeons and Dragons tournament.
And Magic the Gathering stuff, yes.
And I thought that was hysterical.
Yes.
You remember when on the game...
When you and the Beatles performed on the roof of the
butt
RCA
cracks.
Towers.
That was my add-on to the conversation, the YouTube stuff, because I don't know what the hell's going on.
And once again, that's our content creator of programming, also Mike chiming in.
And next week, folks, we're doing His Girl Friday 7-part series. His Girl Friday. It's gonna be terrific for the kids.
So once again, that's just, we like to lead off with what we're watching.
It's a great movie, by the way.
Don't usually. We might have to actually do a retrospective on that. We don't get a chance to comment on regular TV and regular movies, quote unquote, that we watch, not for Oscar purposes and digestive and dissective purposes. So that's kind of why we do
digestive
that.
Digestive purposes.
Those two. I have indigestion. Let's go with 6 Degrees of MMO, our latest round here.
So let's get into this challenge number 5, round 5, whatever you want to call it. It was Steve McQueen, Bullet, and Thomas Crown Affair, actor,
right.
Longtime thespian star, movie star, genuine movie star.
Legitimately, yes.
To the Oscar-winning director from 12 Years a Slave, Shame, The New Widows. See what we did there? We kind of did a themed 6 Degrees where it's Steve McQueen. To Steve McQueen, it's Mike One's brainchild.
That's right.
It's fun, and it's a little tricky this time.
You didn't even have to change letters. That's amazing. Yeah. So we're hyping on the riding the coattails of The Widow's Momentum. That movie just came out this week. We just did an Oscar Sprint profile. If you have not seen the movie yet, don't worry. We have a non-spoiler section for the first half of that review, and a very disappointed politician giving a concession speech spoiler section.
We do break it down in that spoiler.
We absolutely
section.
Do, and I'll tell you what, it's a review you're not going to get in a lot of places because we are definitely in the minority.
It's a controversy starter, and a
lot of people are getting on us for it.
But I stand by it. I think we hit on some good things, and I do. I stand by it. So here we are, like a true politician who's sunk and giving that concession speech.
All right. So, yes, the chain of Steve McQueen actor to Steve McQueen director, the latest round of 6 Degrees of MMO. And for the winner this week, we had someone that went through all sorts of tangential relationships and barely touched on things, and maybe people that didn't really work together. And basically, a record holder was one of the links, which I really appreciated. Anytime you can be creative enough to go through things, like we always say, that aren't traditional mediums, aren't just, you know, actor work with actor in movie. Anytime you can do that, it tickles our fancies. And this is our winner this week, Michael. Who is he and what did he give us?
Robert Doherty at Robert Doc, DOC, 1984. And his submission was, in 12 years, Steve McQueen directed Sarah Paulson, who starred in Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Did you ever watch Studio 60?
I did. It was Aaron Sorkin property. I watched it on Netflix or something.
Yeah.
And it wasn't bad.
I always wanted to get into it. I just never took the dive.
But wasn't bad.
Critics loved it, but it never got a lot of traction with viewers.
Some laughs, good, you know, snappy dialogue.
It's the SNL. As Robert Doherty is telling us, it was based on SNL, right?
Sarah Paulson in a lot of great things. So, again, Sarah Paulson in Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, which was inspired by, like you said, SNL, Saturday Night Live. Now, he could have just said Saturday Night Live had this person in it, but he says Saturday Night Live's hosting record is held by Alec Baldwin.
I love
that. This is playing to the MMO choir here.
He knows his judges.
And Alec Baldwin starred in the remake of The Getaway, so not just one weird connection.
That's right.
We have a connection to a remake.
He's not even using people that work together. He's just using ideas, and this is why I loved it.
And the remake of The Getaway, the original version, starred Steve McQueen.
Beautiful. Beautiful. A-plus job.
Terrific.
Our most unsecured chain yet.
Right.
I think, going through ideas, legends, records, etc. Again, that was the Robert Doherty submission at Robert Doc, R-O-B-E-R-T-D-O-C, 1984. Congratulations.
If he's Bostonian, it's pronounced Doherty.
There you go.
I did that wrong. Doherty. Oh, man, I just lost it.
You nailed
it. It's
going
to turn into Irish accent. Doherty. That's even worse.
You get the bragging rights for this week. Those are the most important currency
of
all.
Top of the morning. Doherty. Okay, there, I found it again.
You could take Wednesday off work as an early Thanksgiving present. Tell your boss that you got the okay from us. We want to read off a couple honorable mentions this week, connecting actor from Bullet, Steve McQueen, to Widows director, Steve McQueen, 12 Years a Slave director, Steve McQueen. Mike, what else? What were some of the other ones that tickled your fancy here?
At Derek J. Sherwood said, actor Steve McQueen was in Papillion with Dustin Hoffman, the original. Hoffman was in Godfather 2. No.
Question mark.
Though he actually fixed this later on. You just mentioned to me in the pre-production. He fixed this later on saying, okay, no, Hoffman was not in Godfather 2, but he was in
Meet the Fockers
with Robert De Niro.
So good for Derek Sherwood for editing his own copy there. And I was actually, my response to him when he put that, I was like, was Hoffman in a really believable Marlon Brando mask in Godfather father too? Was it like one of those meta things? But no, instead of risking us calling him out, when that day I can't wait for someone to try to slip a fact by us that's just totally made up just banking on us not doing our research. But yes, he corrected himself. Hoffman not, of course, in Godfather 2. Hoffman and De Niro were in Meet the Fockers. De Niro was the next link in this chain.
He was with Lady Gaga in The Sound of Music.
Of course.
Was with, no. So Steve McQueen with Dustin Hoffman in Papillion.
Poker face.
Hoffman with Robert De Niro in Meet the Fockers. Robert De Niro with Liam Neeson in The Mission. Liam Neeson in Steve McQueen, the director, in that movie, Widows, what we just reviewed.
Ben Miller, he's appeared on numerous Six Degrees of MMO rankings. He actually won one of our very first ones back in, I think, September.
He's great. He's good at this.
At Neb is Ben, at N-E-B-I-S-B-E-N. He said, strap in, is how he led this off. Steve McQueen, the director. He did 12 Years a Slave, so he's working backwards. We'll allow it because it's our game. We made it up. Mm-hmm. Steve McQueen, the director.
We didn't specify, to be fair.
Who directed 12 Years a Slave with Alfre Woodard in it. Alfre Woodard was in Blue Chips with Lou Gossett Jr., also in Love and Basketball, which are two basketball movies.
Alfre Woodard, yep.
Straight out of our MMO Does Basketball, our Final Four basketball tribute shows that we did back in March.
We did for all the basketball movies ever made that took me like 50 hours to do. That was a good episode.
So Blue Chips with Lou Gossett Jr. Lou Gossett Jr. was in Club Soda, a short film with actor, I guess, Stephen R. McQueen.
This blows my mind. He found another Steve McQueen, and this is a Stephen R. McQueen.
Stephen R. McQueen was in Stories USA with Allison Down. Allison Down was in The Day the Earth Stood Still in 08 with James Hong. James Hong was in The Sand Pebbles with actor Bullet Fame Steve McQueen. He went from Steve McQueen to Steve McQueen by way of Steve McQueen.
So either his internet connection is so fast that he can click back and forth with Allison Down and James Hong and basically go up and down the cast, or he has great recall, which is my guess.
What an amazing link. What a great game. This is why we do this, because Mike and I are just technologically illiterate, and so we just sit back and watch your guys' creative genius, and we're happy to spread the word and be your mouthpiece for it, because you guys do a great job with this.
Ronnie Casol at Ronnie Howlett, i.e. for Ronnie, and Howlett is with two T's, Ronnie Howlett 3. Steve McQueen, actor, was in Bullet with Robert Duvall, who was in Widows, the Steve McQueen directed movie.
That's the shortest one we had this round.
So he would have won the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Unfortunately, it's 6 degrees of MMO, and all our rules are arbitrary and ridiculous.
Change on a whim.
We award you no points, and may God have mercy on
naturally,
your soul,
but
Ronnie,
sure. I mean,
for winning
the
game.
That was the shortest connection this week, so good for you, Ronnie. Great job, and Ronnie does a lot of retweeting of our stuff and likes our stuff. Very, very appreciative of him. Thank you for listening, Ronnie. And the last one we'll kind of go over here is So I'm Watching This Show, at So I'm Watching. Again, they participate in a lot of things. The self-professed one of the kings of 6 degrees, as they explained it to me when we first introduced 6 degrees of MMO, and they are often putting in some great submissions. This is no different. Steve McQueen was in The Thomas Crown Affair 1968 with Faye Dunaway, who pronounced La La Land was the best picture winner. That's not in this chain. That's a fact. Who was in The Handmaid's Tale in 1990 with Natasha Richardson, who was married to Liam Neeson in real life.
The old marriage connection.
Liam Neeson in Widows, directed by Steve McQueen. Nice job. Close. Came very close to winning. The little offbeat, not quite a actor relationship, actor-director relationship, but a real-life husband-wife relationship coming into play for the first time.
The wonderful audacity to choose marriage. Natasha Richardson, great actress, Liam Neeson. That's an excellent job. Couple honorable mentions. We had the winner. Congratulations. You get nothing, but
you get bragging rights, which is the most important currency of all, really. And again, you can take Tuesday or Wednesday off work. Your choice. We are held harmless because I'm a lawyer, so those words mean things now.
So
that was round 5 of 6 degrees of MMO. We're going to keep it going right through Thanksgiving week. Look. You're going to be with your family this week. You're going to need something to talk about around the dinner table that isn't politics, because nobody likes stepping on those conversational landmines. So let's do something fun. Let's have something that can connect a couple generations apart here. Something nice and easy. Two actors that have worked together on numerous properties, one older, one younger.
Pick your favorite movie of theirs.
It's a long history of work together. Sometimes one directed, I think, the other one produced. These two people have no relation whatsoever. Mike, what's our chain?
One died before they could actually act together. She's become a star now. All right, so my favorite Thanksgiving movie or kind of road trip movie is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Classic.
This is Steve Martin, who's very funny in it. And this is, of course, John Candy. And they're on planes, they're on trains, they're on automobiles trying to get home.
John Candy may be the underrated, uncrowned king of chance holiday movies, right? People don't think Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is a Thanksgiving movie. It is. People don't necessarily think of Home Alone as a Christmas movie. It definitely is. Kind of making those little inroads with all those holidays.
Yes, he's a holiday favorite, and he's a sleeper holiday favorite actor.
That's the word I was looking for. Thank you.
And in terms of this year and a movie we loved already, Sorry to Bother You, Tessa Thompson was a sleeper favorite of ours as well. She is going to be in Creed 2, which drops this week. I think Tuesday comes out.
Sounds good.
John Candy to Tessa Thompson. Let's see it.
John Candy in illustrious film history. Tessa Thompson's starting to spread her wings. She's becoming more famous by the day and by the product, really. She's in a bunch of stuff lately.
Better and better in each film. Yeah, loved her in Annihilation. Sorry to Bother You this year. Creed 2, looking forward to it. She was awesome in Creed 1. John Candy, sentimental favorite. New favorite, Tessa Thompson. Let us know. That's round number 6. That's your challenge.
Ring the bell. All right, let's go through some box office numbers from this past week in theaters. That's a proper word. Mike, what do we have?
Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. $62.2 million at the domestic box office.
I don't get it. A lot of people were disappointed by what they saw. Pretty much everyone on Film Twitter we follow was a little let down by this. We kind of said didn't seem like it had a great story to it, even though there was some special effects bells and whistles that intrigued us.
It got poo-pooed on Twitter.
We
called that.
$62 million domestically worldwide. It already brought in almost $200 million internationally alone.
A story came out about J.K. Rowling writing it in like 25 minutes. Something absurd like that.
Yeah, that checks out.
It got me very angry as a screenwriter. Even if she said 25 days, I would have been angry.
I saw one report call it a disappointment. Jealous. With 62 to 65 million opening. Here's the facts. There's only been one movie opened in 2018 with $60 million or more on its domestic opening weekend that didn't do $200 million minimum at the box office. And that was Halloween, which opened October 19th, which is probably going to finish around the $160, $165 million total rake.
So, and internationally, it's already up to $250.
Right. So if you're going to talk about how this is a disappointment, it's going to make its production budget back. Mm-hmm. The production budget on Box Office Mojo is $200 million. It's going to make that back in domestic alone.
Well, Mike, they were counting them chickens.
Yes, I just don't.
$191 million foreign box office, though.
It's huge. So it's at $250 already overall.
$253, yeah. So it's going to make money. There will be a Fantastic Beast, the end of...
The Limes of Grindelwald.
Grindelwald's supremacy.
I can make up fake villains, too. JK.
Dr. Seuss's The Grinch made $38 million, held strong, $150 total, including the domestic box, the foreign box office.
Yeah, it's done $100 million domestically. It's doing well.
Bohemian Rhapsody made 15.7.
That won't go away.
Is a surprised juggernaut right now because that's up to 384 worldwide off a $52 million budget. Big money.
One of the news stories we're going to talk about in just a couple minutes is about how the Oscars handled their popular film category and what the Academy is still trying to reach towards. And this one just speaks more and more. Like, I think the box office is really going to help Rami Malek become a nominee.
Yeah, and he's becoming a household name now with Mr. Robot and this. Sure. Instant Family comedy made $14.7 million. That's off a $48 million budget. It'll play through the holidays. It has a chance. We'll see. Widows, the movie we reviewed and keep referring to on this pod, made $12.3 million. That's on the lower end of expectations. We said 12 to 18 projection.
And I would like my $10 back.
No, it's not that bad.
No, it's
$42 million budget. Overlord looks like it's getting close as one addition. $32 million worldwide total off a $38 million budget. It'll hold over through the holidays. Maybe it'll have a chance. But Dragon Tattoo underperforming. The Oscar movies right now underperforming a little bit. So we'll see.
Yeah, I saw another Hollywood Reporter always goes in depth with their specialty screenings too. It looked like At Eternity's Gate set the record for specialty films this weekend, averaging $23,000 plus per theater opening.
Okay.
Would you ever forgive me? I think it was $15,000 per. So they're making money. They're not making. They're not going to be profitable, but those films never are. We always talk about that. So.
And The Star Is Born's up to $340 worldwide box office cume off of $36 million.
And yet it had some serious upsets and some awards precursors we'll talk about at the end of this show. Yes, so sir. That's our box office look. And now let's keep this train rolling into one of the fancy new drops we have for Do You Care? Well, Bradley Cooper, you could suck on those musical talents for a while. This is Do You Care, our segment here where we go through some little smaller news stories of the week and we ask ourselves and each other, should we and do we care about this? So, Michael, I would like to start with this. Mm-hmm. We have a gigantic week of film releases coming up right now. Sure. Ralph Breaks the Internet, Creed 2, Green Book, The Favorite, Shoplifters. Why they would choose to release Robin Hood this week as well, I don't know, but that's coming out too. Obviously, you do care which of these titles or another one do you care most about?
Now, Green Book is going to be an everything contender at the Oscars, so I really should say Green Book.
Sure.
Ralph Breaks the Internet is going to be a best animated film contender at the Oscars. I should say that as well. We already did Isle of Dogs and The Incredibles 2. We're going to follow the best animated feature category.
Go check out those Oscar spread profiles.
So in terms of wide releases, I got to say Creed 2 because I'm a Rocky-aholic.
Oh, God damn it.
They're everybody's saying it's going to be like Rocky IV. Now, I don't think we're going to review this. We're still deciding yet if we're going to review it as a movie event or not. Let us know if you come to us.
Yes, please.
And you want this movie reviewed, I will happily oblige you.
We're open to it. We're going to say nothing but positive things about it because we're red-blooded Americans. But
I'm
going to
see it regardless. Yeah. And we're also going to do Green Book, and we think Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Let me pitch this to you, okay? Rocky IV happens. He beats Drago, gives the speech, ends the Cold War. What if Creed 2, Drago's kid comes back, Creed beats him, we start the Cold War again.
Start a new
it's
Cold War.
It's a nuclear war between us and Russia because of Michael B. Jordan.
Well, that would be a little flip on the script.
Would you be okay with that?
In a sequel, you have to twist something, right?
Right?
Like Arnold goes from bad guy to good guy in the Terminators, spoiler alert, and we have Creed 2 starting. If nobody can change, then we have to go to
then
war.
Then we'll all die together.
That's ridiculous and dorky. Michael, what do you care about the most out of those wide releases?
That's an interesting question. I wasn't prepared for it. I probably should have been. I really am looking forward to Ralph Breaks the Internet because I'm simple like that, but I've been on Green Book since we saw the first trailer, and I'm excited to see something actually have a chance to make some noise against The Star Is Born.
That 70 Metascore is so weird.
Yeah,
it stands out to
it
me.
It does.
Like, everything's great. All the pundits love it. Everybody says the performances are phenomenal, and yet 70 Metascore.
Yeah, I'm not happy with it.
What
I'll
the hell
be
does that
mean? It does worry me a little bit. Look, we've been on the other side of this too, right? We just saw how Widows was 86, I think, and we were not fans of it. We don't consider that an Oscar contender at all, so maybe this is just a weird year for as far as Metacritic goes.
In limited releases, like you said, Shoplifter's very interested in that. Front Runner will expand. The Favorite opens only in 4 theaters. We won't get that in Connecticut just yet. Boy Erased expands to us for like a week and a week only kind of deal with what we looked at in Fandango.
Yeah, that's just really falling off a cliff.
Yeah, unfortunately, but we're going to have to go to the movies a lot. Good God, help us. What else is new, though? So, Mike,
I need money.
We have Mickey Mouse's 90th birthday today, 11/18. Disney is responsible for 1 billion films. Do you care about the mouse turning 90?
I care about them not neutering Deadpool. yeah, no, of course you do. I love Disney, and I was raised on it. I think every majority of people our age were. I am on record as saying my favorite film of all time that I used to watch when I was homesick as a child, and by child I mean like 16-year-old boy, was Cinderella. I'm just obsessed
Man-child.
With it. Yes,
okay.
I still watch it to this day. I am very grateful to Disney. It is responsible for some of my highest highs and my lowest lows, being an 8-year-old hiding myself from the Snow White witch and the Snow White ride in Disney World in Florida. Mm-hmm. I could not bear to see that witch turn around and frighten the shit out of me. So that wasn't nice, but yeah, why not? I love Disney. I know there's always that downside that you could talk about, like a lot of people do, about, oh, they don't pay their workers enough wages in the park and et cetera, but
they're the part of a future monopoly on the entertainment business. And the
future.
the mouse ears are the symbol of that. But no, we say congratulations. I've loved Disney products my whole life. Grew up on them as well.
And happy birthday, Mickey.
Happy birthday.
Thanksgiving is Thursday, Michael. We're both portly gentleman. Do you care? And more importantly, which carb do you care most about?
This is a tough question. This is the toughest question in the history of this podcast, because I love all carbs equally. You think of the mashed potatoes. Mm. You think of the IPAs that my brother's going to bring over and all the weird beers I'm going to drink. You think of the stuffing. Mm. You think of the gravy.
Oh, take a bath in that shit.
I think if I have to pick, I'm going to pick the sausage stuffing.
Oh.
Just because. And I'm going to put a little gravy on it, so I'm going to cheat.
No, see, you can't put gravy on stuffing.
It's a grow day.
You can't. Back it on mass. You can't put gravy on stuffing.
Oh, I can.
No,
and
you
I will.
Need gravy on the turkey, because the turkey. First of all, can we end this facade?
I used to not put gravy on the stuffing. No, I'm going to go at you for this. No, you get gone after.
No, but you're wrong. You're wrong.
But here's where I'm right. You ever have the gravy melt off onto the stuffing and it sogs it up just the perfect amount, and then with the crunchy, breadcrumbs,
stuffing...
but then you also have the sausage in there, and sausage gravy is the best gravy.
Right, I agree with
and
that.
And then if you accidentally have a spoonful of some gravy from the turkey and the sausage stuffing, it is the perfect match. And ever since that happened to me, that fortuitous moment, it was serendipitous, Mike. And ever since that moment, I have put gravy on the stuffing, and I will again.
We won't be recording Thursday, is our way of telling you that. You're going to be MMO list as far as recordings go.
Can't wait till Thursday.
We might have a new episode for you that day, but we will not be meeting in person. We hope you all have a happy Thanksgiving. Regardless of how we feel about gravy, sausage stuffing is the correct answer. I agree with you there.
That's funny.
Even though my mother routinely also puts mac and cheese on the table, homemade mac and cheese.
Oh, nice.
For the Thanksgiving.
Well,
meal,
I'm crashing your party,
but can
too.
We get rid of the turkey? Does anybody actually like turkey?
It's all right.
It's dry. It's always dry.
It doesn't have to be. You go dark meat.
Yeah, that's great. I have to. But why don't I just eat what I want to eat and just eschew the turkey? Like, the turkey's the biggest fucking thing. It takes the most time.
I'm with you. The fixins make the meal.
Of course they do.
The fixins make the meal.
And canned cranberry jelly, right?
I'm not a huge fan of the cranberry jelly. I like it as a little, add-on. I mean,
taste. If you want canned or do you want the berries, whole berries?
For me, cranberry's a fruit, right? So I'm not that interested. Fruits and vegetables. No, I'm kidding. I have a well-balanced diet. One day a week.
Gravy.
I let myself eat something green or red or something different. But yeah, I'm in. Otherwise, it's just all brown. No. Where is this going? The fact is, we care.
Yes.
That's the fact, and that was Do You Care?
We spent twice as long on that as we did about Mickey Mouse's 90th birthday.
Absolutely.
Which seems accurate for this podcast. Let's roll into the top stories of the week. News, 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 news! News of the week brought to you by MMO. Here's the way we see it. Mike, you want to lead us off here with another sad passing?
Yeah, William Goldman died. He's the writer and novelist of The Princess Bride, screenwriter of All the President's Men, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He's the writer of the canonical book on screenwriting adventures in the screen trade. He's a writing hero of mine. He famously said about the Hollywood industry, "Nobody knows anything. Nobody knows nothing." I forget what the actual quote is in terms of the powers that be predicting things in this business. I grew up on The Princess Bride. You will be missed, William Goldman.
Yes,
RIP. Condolences to his family and friends.
All the President's Men, one of our all-time favorites, regardless of genre or cinema. Of course, he took home both the original screenplay Oscar for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He took home the adapted screenplay Oscar for All the President's Men in 1977. Only a handful of playwrights have ever accomplished that feat, so he was one of the best. Princess Bride is another one of those Disney-esque pictures, like Disney properties that we all grew up on. That's actually, again, one of the news stories we had on last week, was how Disney's going to PG-13-ify Deadpool 2.
Right.
The recut of Deadpool 2 is going to be presented in a Princess Bride-type fashion. That's why Fred Savage is involved. Going to be basically reshooting the whole Peter Falk, Fred Savage beginning with Ryan Reynolds' character there. Wouldn't have had that if it wasn't for William Goldman. So an esteemed talent, one that was a huge hit throughout his life, one that will certainly be missed. And I echo your sentiments about him, his
great
legacy.
Great storyteller.
Telling his family that we feel very sorry for his passing. And he was a great man, great talent that we lost. Moving on here, next one, Filmstruck Service. There was a article in The Hollywood Reporter that talked about how all the biggest names in Hollywood kind of penned this letter together to tell Filmstruck powers that be to not kill the service.
Right.
And apparently it's still being killed, but it's kind of being revived. You want to get into that a little bit?
They basically said that the Criterion Collection revealed a plan to launch a freestanding streaming service in the spring, featuring its vast collection of classics, the source of much of Filmstruck's vaunted library. Additionally, that library will be a part of the larger Warner Media's platform due next year in 2019. So two areas you can get a hold of the Criterion Collection and all these classic films from Filmstruck is you're going to have kind of two ways at it with the Criterion Collection getting launched, and these filmmakers are kind of patting themselves on the back, and rightfully so. They're getting these out there to the fans in another way or in two other ways.
Yeah, this article kind of suggested a couple things to me. One, I feel like somebody at the Hollywood Reporter really wanted to save Filmstruck because they dropped everybody in Hollywood royalty's name attached to this infamous letter that went around. Yep. I mean, we're talking about Star Wars directors, we're talking about Oscar winners, we're talking about Leos, you know, like everybody that had any kind of relationship to this letter was touched on here. I think it's great to see Hollywood's microphone be used to save this type of product. I just don't know that this collaboration or this effort really did all that much, because it seemed like this Criterion Collection streaming service and Warner Brothers, the other half, starting their own streaming service, was kind of something that was going to happen anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, this seemed like a happy incident. Like, let's combine our efforts to make our voices heard. And at the same time, oh, okay, well, we're doing this anyway. You guys could take credit for it if you want, but it's happening regardless. Mm-hmm. And so everyone just kind of died down. Guillermo del Toro was one of the ones that was like, this is a happy medium, as soon as the Criterion Collection service was announced. So, okay, I don't know that this actually did anything.
Yeah, I don't know what they did, but they're taking credit for
right,
it as directors can,
sure,
I guess.
That's what Hollywood's
and they
for.
Did. I don't get it either. I wonder if there was haggling involved with the Criterion Collection and how much money it would cost for them to rent their license their whole collection, I guess.
Well, the strangest part to me is that there was no effort undertaken here by all these elites to like.
It's not like they intermediated and said, all right, Warner Media, you know, we got, you know, them to drop their price.
Exactly. Or there's not like they took up a collection amongst themselves and said, like, here, we're only, you know, like they were just like, don't kill this thing that ends up being killed anyway. And they're like, oh, well.
But revived in two other ways.
Right. Which is fine. It's great. And I think that's my final point here and the most important one. I think it's very important for Hollywood to kind of take stock and preserve and prepare their history to be presented to a new generation for appreciation. And I think that's always been kind of a thing they've been lacking. I don't think they've realized just how much of their industry rests on the history of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like more than half of the industry has always been like VHS sales, DVD sales, Blu-ray sales now. Sure. And now it's streaming's on top of that. And YouTube and everything is on top of that. Right. Why wouldn't you have these go-to Hall of Fames, essentially, of these streaming services where people can access this history, these legacies, and see them for themselves for the first time and experience them.
One thing's for sure, a lot of film Twitter friends we have and people we follow, they exhibit their Criterion Collection DVDs
yes.
like crazy, and Blu-rays like crazy.
Badge of honor, yeah.
And so the people who love the Criterion Collection, they're also buying DVDs and Blu-rays, so not necessarily
sure.
streaming everything all the time. So that's interesting. I find that it's fascinating.
Any big sports, you know, we're big sports guys. We can always relate it back to that. But MLB, NBA, NHL, all the big major ones, NFL, they all run on their own channels,
right.
And their own channels are filled with their own content. And what do they have for their own content? Well, they have historical stories, whether they're first-person narratives or
yeah.
replays of games. That's kind of, I don't understand why the major studios haven't gotten on top of this already.
I'm in a situation in terms of the money I have to spend. I have to do streaming, and I have to do like AMC or movie
right.
pass or something like that
right.
because I have to see the Netflix stuff. That's $10 a week. I'm going to have to, I have to do Amazon because I need the shipping
right.
break. I have to do these things. So if I'm going to do these things, then I can't be buying VHSs and DVDs like I used to when I was younger, because I don't have that amount of disposable income. It's just the facts.
Right.
So I can't be buying
So you
them.
Need this.
I need
so do
this.
Do it for Mike.
Do it for me. I need this.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting to see. I am glad to hear Criterion and Warner Brothers are kind of doing their own things.
Sure.
I would like to see MGM take a dive, too. We'll see what happens in the coming years. A follow-up just to our biggest story last week, which was the California wildfires. This, again, comes from The Hollywood Reporter. They talked about how there are all sorts of buildings and sets which are being destructive and have already been
destroyed,
pretty much
yeah.
burned to the ground
yeah.
due to these awful wildfires, which now covers over 100,000 acres of land, I was reading.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
This is a crisis.
Of course, the the Universal HBO dramas Westworld was shot in a Universal Paramount Ranch. I'm sorry, Paramount Ranch, which had been used for a couple different sets. Comedy Central was filming Drunk History nearby. Zach Galifianakis had an untitled Netflix problem. This is all from the Hollywood Reporter as well. All those had to cease production due to these fires. The film industry there over in California, I guess, has stopped giving out permits altogether. Right. So even if you wanted to shoot something right now, you really couldn't. You can't get out the area of California. Yeah, and why wouldn't you? You're just at self-preservation at this point. You're keeping people from any kind of unnecessary damage, any further damage.
Yeah, The Favorite, that movie canceled its red carpet. There's just a lot of, it's a reverberation effect. I mean, it is a crisis. So just stay safe and healthy here. I know it's a waking nightmare, but it's smart for these towns to reject permits, in my opinion, and my humble opinion.
I agree.
I the potential for extra casualties, you can't put those people at risk. You can't misspend any resources on this when you have to devote your resources and when you have to devote your attentions to solving the crisis. And it's just sad, and it's unfortunate, and global warming is real. God damn it. What the fuck?
Well, different argument for a different time, but yes. There's all kinds of outlets. We highlighted the EIF one for you last week. If you want to donate some of the money, these guys could really use it. The firefighters there are working day and night trying to fight. You could see, just tip on any news screen, you'll see the images of these planes carrying gallons of water, just trying to dump it, keeping the fire at bay. It's really terrible. The death toll rises daily. All this property and all these extras are being burned. And it's not just the Hollywood Hills and the expensive, valuable people and valuable properties being burned. It's also everyday folk, blue collar, hardworking people that are
absolutely
starting to lose everything. So if you can donate, like we said last week, we really would really, I'm sure they would appreciate it out there, and it could really use their help. And we got to have each other's backs out here, right? That's kind of what part of being a human is.
Well, to get back to some regular news stories, and this was something we covered three times in breaking news episodes from MMO, the best popular film Oscar was there, was part of this year's show, and we discussed all the fallout from it. We discussed how we'd fix the Oscars, and that's still a relevant episode to this day with a great shelf life, and we were right. And
it's the best answer we've had.
Then we discussed the fallout from when they took the Best Popular Film Oscar away. They shelved it for the time being. And this was a Vanity Fair article about the panic that the Academy went through, and kind of an inside baseball article here, Michael. It was Rebecca Keegan's article on Vanity Fair there. After the 2018 telecast, hosted by Jimmy Kimmel, produced by Michael DeLuca and Jennifer Todd, discussions about changes to the show that had percolated for years escalated in the spring. An Academy and ABC postmortem meeting about the telecast felt like a, quote, red alert, one board member said. ABC said, look, guys, we understand the films that are nominated are the films that are nominated, but we have to make the show more relatable, said a source familiar with the conversation. Quote, we leave it with you guys to figure out a way to do that, unquote. The board member said that the issue reached, quote, a tipping point, unquote. And then they said, this year, on the heels of the Me Too and Time's Up, the show had become so political, the board member said. It was too long. It just veered off its mission. A lot of criticism there being leaked at this point, which we're on. We said this was not just about the popular films. Yeah. This was about the politics.
Reading the tea leaves there. This is clearly ABC/Disney is driving this bus, which I think makes the political comments there read terribly for them.
It reads bad. It does read bad.
I think it's a good idea for the Academy to kind of bend to the will of ABC. I get it. That same article goes on to say that a 30-second spot was sold by ABC during last year's telecast for like $2.6 million.
Right.
Which the Oscars gets a piece of. If there's more people watch, they get more ad revenue to themselves for it. I get it. I understand that there's financial stuff at stake, and they're going to do those hard changes, and that's always why we've kind of said the hashtag stay woke conspiracy about the Disney getting that animated feature Oscar and already being decided for everyone. I just think, again, I go back to that political point. If you want to go out of your way to make things not political, all you're doing is making it political, if that makes any sense. If you're going to stifle these people's freedom of speech, that's going to become an issue unto itself. And that's just going to become negative press for you, never mind what they're protesting.
And it's not going to work.
Yeah,
it's
no, of course
totally,
not. Of course
it's totally not,
not
going to work, but it's not even going to work with the movies. I mean, think about it. Even if these popular films are nominated in some way, shape, or form, even if it's in the Best Picture category, which doesn't seem like it's possible, you still have films that are political even this year. Black Panther, Avengers Infinity War, Mission Impossible, Crazy Rich Asians, Mary Poppins Returns. If that was your best popular film category, are you bringing enough Republicans in to view this movie?
Of course not.
Or to view this award show? I don't think so. Plus, Black Panther is making a lot of statements. Political statements, which we praised it for.
Yeah, it's the right of the film. It is right for the film to do, and the film industry should be embracing those things. And what's the beacon? That's the head of the ship in the film industry. It's the Oscars.
Right.
So I don't understand why they're going to take this. I think it reads terribly. It reads terribly for all parties involved. The best popular film category, you were one of the few people that took a positive spin on it. But for most people, they took the cynical spin of this is not going to be good. As an overall thing, it's just going to drive more people away.
Well, ultimately, we landed on the fact, and I said it from the beginning too, that it's going to piss off Best Picture nominees, and it's also going to make, you know, the Best Popular Film nominees feel like second class. So it's going to be a lose-lose. Something like A Star Is Born this year, Michael, to get back on topic here. Will that help ratings by be something that's more of a crossover hit? I don't know. It's still a very inclusive movie, so there are political statements being made in that movie as well. It shouldn't be this, that an inclusive movie is a political statement. It's kind of ridiculous that's the facts of it.
You know why it's a political statement? Because the politics right now of the country in charge is so, it is, I'm sorry, it's divisive.
Yeah.
It's very white or black. And I mean that not as a specific term, but it can be taken that way as well. But it's the only reason these issues really are seeping themselves into everyday pop culture is as a means of the resistance against what is happening in Washington. I'm sorry.
Right. So is there anything they can do to make the Oscars less political? I mean, in terms of the film choices, in terms of the speeches, they could do stuff. But
bring back Obama.
Is it going to happen?
No.
No.
And I don't think it should. Why give these people... I don't understand. You want to stifle those people that are the societal role models that we all have admonished and thrown the most amount of money in the world to, and we put up on these pedestals as they are, but you don't want them to speak their minds. God forbid they speak their minds or show themselves to be have humanity or have genuine thoughts. It's it's such a double standard. It's ridiculous.
And the way everything gets leaked now, of course it'll come out if Disney does make
statement they're making? We don't want the Me Too movement to be asked about on the red carpet? Are you fucking kidding me? Is that what you're saying?
That would have been the worst press PR move ever.
What are you talking about here, Academy? Oh,
no, I think it reads terribly. That board is out of touch.
Which is, there has to be a backlash against it once this comes out. There has to be, because if you're going to widen the Academy, which has been the push ever since the Oscars So White backlash, which was it's in itself a terrible controversy for the Academy. If you're going to widen the Academy to be more inclusive, I think they said it was a 9,000 member Academy now or something like that, then... Of course you need to have it run democratically, run off the basis of ideas, embrace differences, and go towards the ideals that celebrate the inclusiveness and happiness. And the celebration of diversity, generally speaking, taking politics out of it, is more of a liberal view than a conservative view. It just is.
At least now it is. I mean, it used to be not so much.
Well, the platforms
were switched. Party of Lincoln, whatever. I mean, going all the way back, but even... You know, back in I just watched Reversing Roe, and it was a Republican movement to get Roe v. Wade going. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just the parties have switched, and the ideologies have, you know, cemented on opposite sides. So it doesn't make a ton of sense here. But I don't think the Academy is going to solve the politics problem by putting popular films in there. But if they did want to get some more popular films in there, Christopher Tapley from Variety tweeted it the other day, force the Best Picture category to nominate 10 movies every year.
I don't hate that.
Up to that. And do away with preferential balloting, essentially.
Preferential balloting's got to die.
Or make it all through the one through 10.
I agree.
So he said something like that. Don't quote me. But he had a fix. So, you know, tune into his tweets and what he said about it at Variety. Christopher Tapley.
It blows my mind how you want to be relevant. And they go on to say in the article, the popular film idea isn't dead, even though, quote, a stake has been driven through it. It still has life. Whatever that means. Take it for what it's worth.
Just understand that it's a bad idea. And figure something else out.
You can't have it both ways, too. You can't say we don't want any political things, but we want all the biggest superstars in the world to treat this with the respect that we think it's worth. because you're silencing them,
right?
Right? If you do that, that's, you're taking away their ability to take a stand on anything and use the biggest platform they have in any given night. I mean, there's only one night where all the elites of Hollywood gather.
You know, it's a quote in an article that based on a leakage, right? It's probably them venting. So I don't want to say they're not going to come out and tell Meryl Streep to not to give a speech or not to or tell Frances McDormand, are they? They're not that stupid.
Yeah,
they're not that stupid.
I hope not, but I didn't think anyone would be stupid enough to say the Me Too movement is a bad idea to talk about. So I don't know. I'm hoping you're right. I'm hoping this is just hot air. And this is their venting their frustrations, but that's definitely something you want to keep an eye out for. But again, that's a Rebecca Keegan article out of Vanity Fair talking about the Oscar panic that set in after this past year's Oscar ceremony. It also suggests to me that Jimmy Kimmel has hosted his last Oscars, which I think is sad. I thought he did a great job.
Right.
And who else would have handled that Moonlight fiasco 2 years ago better than he did?
Yeah, he did well. So I loved all the post-Oscars coverage of him based on the show and then the podcast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He was great, too. I mean, he took a lot of interviews. He went on James Corden, I remember, for Fill Your Guts or Spill Your Guts. You know, he was doing all the talk circuits, so he did his part to promote it. I think it's a damn shame if you put any of the blame for the lack of ratings on him, too, which seems to be what they might want to do.
I don't know. It doesn't make sense. They're blaming everybody is what it's happening.
Well, you know what happens when you point fingers.
All right, so let's rip through a Oscar race update here. A lot of precursor awards and nominations are coming out recently. None of the huge stuff yet. We do have Independent Spirits, which will be fun. Shout out to Matt Neglia and our friends at Next Best Picture, nextbestpicture.com. They do a great job showcasing these articles. I actually use them as reference points. So the first of these precursors that I want to hit is the 2018 European Film Awards. Basically, this is Cold War's chance to show out and gain some momentum here, Michael. Roma's not there. It's from Mexico. The Favorite is not there for some reason. Maybe Matt and company can explain this to me better, but that's a British production. Maybe it's a dual production, but that's not there. So you have Cold War, Border, Girl, Dogman, Happy as Lazaro in the Best European Film category throughout the nominations. And I think if Cold War is going to be a contender for Best Picture, it's going to have to clean up at these, no?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I also wonder if we did do the Tapley route of keeping the nominations at a hard 10, if instead of veering towards popular films in the Best Picture category, we'd also start to get more international films instead.
Sure. Might
happen. Those in. That might be a side effect, an unforeseen side effect. But yeah, Cold War's gotten a lot of great press. Cold War and Roma are pretty much the two. I don't think anything holds a candle to Roma as far as international film goes, so it'll be nice to see. Maybe this will be what I was complaining about last time, about how I wanted the International Feature Film Award to not have Roma as a submission, to see these ones battle it out, even though this one seems to be only Cold War heavy and not so much
Roma.
It's going to
be a submission, though, unfortunately, because it takes away its Best Picture chances, more than likely. Or maybe it'll win both. Who knows? Maybe it's that great coming into Netflix beginning of December there, Roma. But Cold War, this is a chance to show out. We have the Critics' Choice Documentary Awards, Michael. Last year, Jane, Keddy, Abacus, and Clive Davis won those, the main categories, the doc features. This year, Won't You Be My Neighbor, Free Solo, RBG, and Quincy win all those different categories, musical, documentary, sports, etc. There's a political RBG there. So I'm glad more popular docs won this year, but it doesn't necessarily say anything because only Abacus was an Oscar nom at the end of the day last year.
Gun to your head, which of these documentaries has the most momentum right now?
Won't You Be My Neighbor.
You think so still?
Yeah,
I do
even
too.
Still. It won the main one, and Free Solo won sports, political, RBG, Quincy won music.
Yeah, I'd be surprised at the end of the day to see Won't You Be My Neighbor not nominated. But again, Jane last year is the precedent. We don't know what we're talking about with feature-length documentaries as a whole, I guess.
Yeah, the popular ones will win precursors. They won't get nominated. Yeah. I don't know. I'm still waiting for those issue movies to take the four, but they haven't yet, so we'll see. The Hollywood Music and Media Awards, Michael, Mary Queen of Scots won Best Original Score, Feature Film, Black Panther won Sci-Fi, it also won two more, All the Stars Song and Best Soundtrack, Shallow won Original Song, I'll Fight from RBG by Jennifer Hudson won Original Song from a Documentary, Quincy won Best Music Documentary there, so we have a lot of the names that we've accustomed to hearing, but Mary Queen of Scots winning the overall Best Original Score is very interesting.
And isn't Black Panther winning Best Soundtrack the shocking over A Star Is Born. It's all Kendrick Lamar and Future, and
that's a good soundtrack.
It's a great soundtrack, but I'm just shocked that it'd be. I mean, A Star Is Born. I think A Star Is Born is going to have its day at the Oscars, regardless. I think Shallow is like one of the top three best original songs of all time ever to come from a film, so I'm not worried about it. Just surprised, and yeah, why not? I'm here for Black Panther soundtrack. I'm great, awesome.
The British Independent Film Awards, the favorite cleaned up here. Best casting, cinematography, costume design, makeup and hairstyling, production design, won all those craft awards. Lynn Ramsey's drama, You Were Never Really Here, won best music for Johnny Greenwood and best sound. Bart Layton's crime film, American Animals, won the award for best film editing. So this was a craft section of the British Independent Film Awards. Some interesting choices. The favorite cleaning up is a good sign for its Oscar chances. It's a necessary step for that film. American Animals, that makes a lot of sense. Best film editing. You Were Never Really Here. Best music. I don't remember it, but I don't remember music, do I?
Okay.
All right, so the main event, the Film Independent Spirit Awards, these typically do not come all that close for Oscar nominations at the end of the day, but we got some interesting selections here. Eighth Grade, First Reform, If Beale Street Could Talk, Leave No Trace, You Were Never Really Here, and the best feature movies that we've reviewed, Eighth Grade, First Reformed, and Leave No Trace so far in our Oscar Sprint profiles. It was cool to see those movies up there. I think this is just like under $20 million budgets in terms of indie films. Best Director, Deborah Granik, Barry Jenkins, Tamara Jenkins, Private Life, Lynn Ramsey, You Were Never Really Here, Paul Schrader, First Reformed, some names that we've covered as well. Best Screenplay, Colette, Can You Ever Forgive Me, Private Life, Sorry to Bother You, First Reformed. Best First Feature, Hereditary, Sorry to Bother You in there, Wildlife as well. Best First Screenplay, Eighth Grade, Thoroughbreds. Best Cinematography Highlights, Madeline, Suspiria, We the Animals, Wildlife, Mandy, getting a nomination at the Independent Spirit Awards. John Cassavetes Award. We got Thunder Road, Never Going Back in there. We as nominees, Best Female Lead. We got Glenn Close, Toni Collette, Elsie Fisher, Regina Hall, Helena Howard, Carey Mulligan. Male Lead, John Cho, Davy Diggs, Ethan Hawke, Christian Matheros, Joaquin Phoenix. You know, a lot of highlights.
Toni Collette made the cut, which is nice to see.
Yeah.
That's probably the most important takeaway for me, that she, at least some of the awards precursors have not forgotten about her and how amazing she was, even though this is the Independent Spirit Awards. So they're, like you said, lower budget movies. Best for a screenplay, I think, is a nice chance for Bo Burnham to make a little noise there. Eighth Grade seems like his biggest competition might be Thoroughbreds in that category. I could see making a little noise as well.
I liked Helena Howard getting a nod, like I said. I liked that Kaylee Carter from Private Life and Regina King, of course, but Thomasin Harcourt McKenzie from Leave No Trace in there. We have Richard E. Grant in the Best Supporting Male. We have John David Washington in Monsters and Men. Josh Hamilton from Eighth Grade. We're very happy about that, getting some recognition. Just watched Shirkers. Pretty solid. Won't You Be My Neighbor in the Best Doc category. Minding the Gap also in there. International film, The Favorite and Roma and Shoplifters. So we'll have to watch that one. Bonnie Award, Deborah Granik, Tamara Jenkins, Karen Kusama. Three movies that we've been reviewing lately. We're going to review Private Life at some point, we think, and Leave No Trace. It's Kusama. We just reviewed the Destroyer trailer.
Burnham also gets a nomination for Best First Screenplay, but he's not nominated for Best Screenplay or Best Director. But Eighth Grade does make the cut for Best Feature. So go figure. I don't know what that says. Probably doesn't say, well, anything about him getting an Oscar, making the Oscar cut for Best Director this year.
Burning an international film. I want to see that one. A lot of people.
Of course, yeah. I wish Burning could be in the European Film Awards, because he'd go head-to-head against Cold War there, but it doesn't seem to happen. But that is your week! That is your week in review and your week in preview, so we tell you all about the week that was and get you ready for the week that is. And the week that is a short one for you, God willing. We do hope you take a couple minutes off, listen to some of your favorite podcasts. We'll have some reviews coming out for you. We hope that you spend a little time with your family. You enjoy Turkey Day.
We'll have some Buster Scruggs and Green Book, we think, for sure. And then we're going to decide on one or two more for you.
Should be a big week of Oscar Sprint profiles, hopefully. Or maybe we'll just have a complete mental breakdown after recording so much, and we'll just sit here and cry on our microphones for a half hour for one of these episodes. Either way, it's going to be something you'll want to hear.
As always.
So, guys, you can reach out to us. Let us know your comments, concerns, questions about this or any MMOW episode or any Oscar Sprint profile that we do. You can reach out to us, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram. Mike and Oscar on Instagram. Yeah, that's right. I'm just lost in my own head now. MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. Available everywhere, 99% of the places that you do hear podcasts. Michael, what kind of words of wisdom for the week are you sharing with our lovely listeners today to get their Mondays rolling?
Sausage stuffing.
No gravy.
I like gravy. See ya.